Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne. I'm so happy we all are here. I always look forward to this time together. Let's take a few moments to turn within. To find our willingness in our heart to see differently.
Oh, no. Are you there?
We're here.
Oh, okay.
And seeing if you can just touch that willingness. And it doesn't have to be attached to anything, just a feeling of willingness and offering that willingness to the Holy Spirit. Allowing ourselves to be exactly where we're at and trusting that whatever we need, whether it's a word, a thought, if we need to hear something, we'll hear it. Whatever we need will be given. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Ah, feels good to slow down. So we are going to read the very beginning of chapter 11 in the Sparkle edition. It's page 256. In the original edition, same thing, very beginning of chapter 11, it's page 215. And in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it is chapter 12, it's page 215 in the FIP. And it's interesting, I noticed at least one little segment that we'll be reading tonight that is not in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. So if suddenly I start reading something and you're like, what's going on? It's probably just because it's not in the FIP edition book. So we can I'll highlight that when I get to it. There might be more than what I noticed, but I did notice this one part. And we're just going to review the first, we already read the first three paragraphs last week, but I think it would be helpful just to reread them, and then I'll read the fourth paragraph, and we'll pause after that. So chapter 11, God's Plan for Salvation. In the FIP edition, it's called the Holy Spirit's Curriculum. You have been told not to make error real, and that the way to do this is very simple. If you want to believe in error, you would have to make it real because it is not true. But truth is real in its own right, and to believe in truth, you do not have to do anything. Understand that you do not respond to stimuli, but to stimuli as you interpret them. Your interpretation thus becomes the justification for the response. That is why analyzing the motives of others is hazardous to you. If you decide that someone is really trying to attack you or desert you or enslave you, you will respond as if he had actually done so, because you have made his error real to you. To interpret error is to give it power, and having done this, you will overlook truth. The analysis of ego motivation is very complicated, very obscuring, and never without the risk of your own ego involvement. The whole process represents a clear-cut attempt to demonstrate your own ability to understand what you perceive. This is shown by the fact that you react to your interpretations as if they were correct and control your reactions behaviorally but not emotionally. This is quite evidently a mental split in which you have attacked the integrity of your mind and pitted one level within it against another. The judgment of the Holy Spirit. There is but one interpretation of all motivation that makes any sense. And because it is the Holy Spirit's judgment, it requires no effort at all on your part. Every loving thought is true. Everything else is an appeal for help and healing, for healing and help, excuse me. That is what it is, regardless of the form it takes. Can anyone be justified in responding with anger to a plea for help? No response can be appropriate except the willingness to give it to him, for this and only this is what he is asking for. Offer him anything else and you are assuming the right to attack his reality by interpreting it as you see fit. Perhaps the danger of this to your own mind is not yet fully apparent to you, but this by no means signifies that it is not perfectly clear. If you maintain that an appeal for help is something else, you will react to something else, and your response will be inappropriate to reality as it is, but not to your perception of it. This is poor reality testing by definition. There is nothing to prevent you from recognizing all calls for help as exactly what they are, except your own perceived need to attack. It is only this that makes you willing to engage in endless battles with reality, in which you deny the reality of the need for healing by making it unreal. You would not do this except for your unwillingness to perceive reality, which you withhold from yourself. So let's pause there. So I guess the theme that this says, at least to me, is that it says something about, where is that poor reality testing line? We have poor reality testing. Our judgment is faulty, and we react to our brothers as if they are doing something to us, when this is saying that every situation that we find ourselves in, it's either love or a call for love. And if we aren't seeing it as a call for love, we're seeing through the body's eyes. We're listening to the ego. I thought it was interesting, one thing that I'll highlight in the last paragraph that we just read, that sentence, there is nothing to prevent you from recognizing all calls for help as exactly what they are, except your own perceived need to attack. So that sentence to me, it just sort of struck me because I thought that it's our own need to attack in our mind that means we're going to see it out there. So if you, again, that phrase, if you spot it, you got it. If you see that attack out there, it's because we have that need to attack in our own mind. And this is, again, another example of how the Course really doesn't cut us any slack. It's always an inward job. It's always about turning within and being willing to see differently rather than trying to fix somebody else. So any thoughts or comments so far? Anybody have any examples just, or anything strike you about what we just read?
Well, it certainly seems to be the ongoing challenge. How do you see this in that second paragraph? The whole process represents a clear-cut attempt to demonstrate your own ability to understand what you perceive. This is shown by the fact that you react to your interpretations as if they were correct and control, this is the part, and control your reactions behaviorally, but not emotionally. I can't really seem to.
We talked about that a little bit last week, and if anything else has come to anybody since then, please, by all means, share. The way that strikes me is that, you know, I can think of examples where, you know, you're in a situation and something happens, and you perhaps want to be like, you know, what are you doing?
Hello?
Hello?
Uh-oh. Did we get cut off?
I think she got cut off.
Can you all hear me?
No, we can't.
Okay, now we
can.
Now you can? That was really weird. Suddenly, I don't know if you could hear what I hear. Suddenly it said that the conferencing person was just talking and saying that I was in a sub-conference and needed to press star to come back. So you can hear me now?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I have
yep,
no idea what just happened. No idea what just happened. So I don't know when I got cut off, but essentially, so inside, your emotions are going crazy, but you're still on the surface, you know, controlling yourself, so you're not doing something that's, like, socially unacceptable and, like, you know, or just lashing out with your, you know, behavior. You have that perhaps churning of emotions inside. Our emotions aren't controlled, but we're controlling the outside of our reactions, our behavior. That's how I interpret that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That clears it. Yeah, that makes total sense.
Cool. What else? Anybody else have anything come up so far?
I love the line that says, and because it is the Holy Spirit's judgment, it requires no effort at all on your part. I cannot tell you how many times in the last couple of years I've had, like, divinely inspired things happen, and it's like the only way I can describe it is you're taking action without really even being aware that you're a body. Like, you get the urge to call someone, or you are guided to make a decision in some area in your life, and it's like something is dialing the phone for you, or something is writing email for you, or, you know, like, the decision is being made, like, you made this decision before. Like, I just signed up for a workshop last week, and it was like, I knew I had to be in that workshop, but it was like something took over and was doing it for me. I don't know. I don't have another way of describing it, but
that's perfect. That's such a great example where really you're expending no effort at all whatsoever. You're being moved.
Exactly.
That's awesome. I really resonate with that because I've had experiences like that before too. And I mean, even with, I think we talked, I may have brought this up a long time ago, but there's a quote in the Ur text. So this is a version prior to what we're reading where, and I believe that this part is edited out of the version that we're reading in the FIP version, the FIP edition is, Jesus is talking to Helen, and he basically is saying, give the minutiae to me so you can spend more time with me. And he's talking to Helen about a coat that she would have bought, and she would have bought it anyway, but she, you know, wasted all this time because she didn't ask for help. And it's, I've had experiences where, you know, I just feel bogged down with the minutiae, with just so many little things to do, and I just don't want to do it. And finally, after handing it over, it just, like, everything just sort of falls right into place, and it was, I didn't have to put any effort and, you know, forth in getting things done, and it was just easy. It's that big difference of feeling that there's really no effort at all on our part. So I'm so glad you shared that, DJ.
Yeah, I had a little experience this week too, because I'm in the final year of my program, and it's just been really interesting because I'm in this place in my life where I'm grooving sort of in what I'm doing with my angel work. And it was like, you know, first week of classes started, it was like, I really don't want to be doing this. Like, I just had this heaviness, like, I don't want to be doing this again. I don't want to be doing these classes. And I was just feeling really, you know, not peaceful about it. And so I talked with a friend about it, and she's really intuitive also. And then after that, I gave it to Spirit, and I was like, you know, show me what I need to learn here, like, what's coming up. And what I got back was really beautiful. It was like, your presence in these classes is not about the work, you know, because I'd been really stressing myself out about, you know, I don't know if I want to take on this kind of workload, blah, 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 and all the things that the ego kind of takes you down. And it was like, Spirit was like, no, the reason that you're there has nothing to do with the marks that you get, you know, the work that you're doing at the school. It's about the relationships that you're forming and the people that you're catching while you're there. And so it was like a total reversal. It took what I was frustrated with on the level of form and was like, no, the reason you're here is to, you know, do your life purpose work on this campus. So
that's so cool.
It was like a total reversal of how I was thinking, and only spirit can do that. So
yeah.
It was awesome.
That's so true. That is so true. I love that. And only spirit can do that. Wow, what a reframe.
Yeah, totally.
That's amazing. Wow.
No, I can go and I can feel like I'm fulfilling my soul contract. I'm fulfilling my purpose by being there. When I was looking at it the other way, I was just like, oh, I feel drained. I feel like I'm being, you know, pulled down. I feel frustrated. And now it's like a total reframe.
Awesome. Oh, wow. That's so cool. I love it. I love it.
You know,
that
could apply to anything you're doing. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It really can, because there's no mistakes. Even if we think, you know, we're in a situation right now where we don't belong, there are no mistakes.
Yeah.
There's no mistakes. I can't say it enough. The Course says that over and over. There's no mistakes. There's no accidents. There's a line in the Course that talks about how, you know, you think it's essentially saying, you know, bumping into somebody is never by chance. You know, a child who runs into an adult, it's not by chance. There's no accidents whatsoever. So wherever we are, even if we think we're in a situation that we don't like, there's no accidents. We're supposed to be there right now because it's for our greatest learning.
Well, and this is really funny because I've kind of grown up with this incredible work ethic, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Corinne, because I've heard you talk about it on the call before. But I always was like, you know, I have to get A's or B's, anything less than a B. And, you know, like, that, you know, it's ridiculous. But spirit was like, you know, who cares if you get a C or C minus? Who cares? Not the reason why you're doing the program. It's not, you know, it's not about, you know, the material, because I was frustrated on the level of form that, you know, some of the stuff isn't really applying to my life purpose, right? And spirit was like, you know, you can let yourself get a C.
Uh-huh.
You can let yourself get what?
You can let yourself get a C, or you can let yourself, you know, have a lower grade than you're used to, basically.
Doesn't have to be an A.
It doesn't have to be an A. So it was really funny.
That's awesome.
Just so much love, you know, and that's what spirit does. So.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. C is for complete.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, that's great. Wow, thank you so much, Gigi, for sharing that. That's a great example.
Hey, Deidre, this is Rhett. Carrie and I are having a little bit of a hard time hearing you. We're wondering if you're on speakerphone, and we want to hear what you're saying.
No, I'm on Skype. I'm wondering if that's the reason.
Oh, Skype.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. It just sounds a little bit echoey or like you're in a tunnel.
It might be, I wonder if it's different for some of us. Maybe there were one or two moments, Deidre, when it sounded a little echoey, but for the most part, I've been able to understand you. So, I don't know how to fix that.
I don't either, unfortunately.
I just thought I would ask. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully it'll get better. There was one other thing, too, that I just wanted to highlight in this paragraph, and it was the very last sentence, because it was another one of those that struck me, because I have brought up many times before about the importance of looking at our unwillingness to heal, and here it is again, pretty blatant, saying, you know, you wouldn't do this except for your unwillingness, and unwillingness in the Sparkle Edition is in all caps. So it's an emphasized unwillingness, your unwillingness to perceive reality with which you withhold from yourself. So that just strikes me because it just makes me think that I don't necessarily even perceive my unwillingness. You know, it's there, but I'm likely a lot of the time not in touch with it. So there again, reading that brings up willingness in me to look at my unwillingness with the Holy Spirit, even if I'm not aware of any unwillingness in my mind right now. So I thought I would just throw that in there too. Let's read the next paragraph. This actually, the latter part of this paragraph that we're going to read is what I could not find in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition. So those of you who are reading that edition, I'll keep reading what I have in front of me. It is surely good advice to tell you not to judge what you do not understand. No one with a personal investment is a reliable witness, for truth to him has become what he wants it to be. If you are unwilling to perceive an appeal for help as what it is because you are unwilling to give help and to receive it. The analysis of the ego's real motivation is the modern equivalent of the Inquisition, for in both, a brother's errors are uncovered, and he is then attacked for his own good. What can this be but projection? For his errors lay in the minds of his interpreters, for which they punished him. And I'll pause there. So with that last blurb about the Inquisition that does not appear, I actually went on one of the online searchable Foundation for Inner Peace, online editions, and I searched for a number of these word combinations, including Inquisition, and it didn't show up anywhere. So I don't believe that it's in there. And it's interesting because now I don't know anything about really what the Inquisition is that it's referring to, but just a quick Google search, you know, it has something to do with torture, something perhaps, you know, having to do with suppression of heresy, and seem to involve torture. So if we read this, you know, the ego's real motivation is to uncover our brother's errors and still attack him. So that's just that was just striking to me that was in this edition and not in the other edition, because it's kind of meaningful in that it clarifies what can this be but projection. It's the attackers putting their interpretation onto another and punishing that other for it, when it's the people do it, putting the interpretation on the other that are in need of correction themselves. And I really love the first sentence, too. It is good advice to tell you not to judge what you do not understand. Right? And yet, how
for sure.
Do we judge?
And even that second sentence, no one with a personal investment is a reliable witness, for truth to him has become what he wants it to be. So there, with truth to him has become what he wants it to be, it said earlier, we just read it tonight, about we can't make something unreal unless we want it to be. Where was that? I'm just looking really quick to see if I can find it. No, I can't find it.
You know, I see this in myself so often, and the Holy Spirit really is the one who can shift this kind of thing, because mm-hmm. I can't on my own. When I find that, I have a personal investment, and it's really the truth. When you are personally invested in something, that really seems to be the truth for you. You want it to be that way, mm-hmm. and I know how I feel when it's not going well for me. You know, when it's personally invested in something that is not serving me or anybody else's good. But sometimes I just can't get out of that, you know. But that really is the Holy Spirit's job.
Absolutely.
Because I'm very aware anymore of how often, you know, I find myself in this situation and how often I struggle because
right.
of it. And the Holy Spirit really is the answer. It's wonderful when I remember, you know, to call on Him.
Right. It sure is.
Help me with this, please.
Yeah.
I don't need this.
Moment.
I don't really want this. I want to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, to elaborate on this, this idea of no one with a personal investment is a reliable witness, although I'm not finding the exact line that was sort of coming to mind upon reading that. If you think about it, we have a personal investment in being a person. All of us in this world have a personal investment in being a person, and what we do then is call forth witnesses to prove that that's true. So we're seeing what we want to see because we have a personal investment in this world. And so that's what the Course is here to show us, that we're the ones that have this, you know, investment in this and are literally, you know, making this whole thing up, that reality is not this. It's not what the body's eyes behold.
I had a funny little experience yesterday when I was at the eye doctor's. I have noise damage, and it's very painful to be in a situation where there's a lot of screaming or anything, and there was a little girl out in the waiting room, 2-year-old. She was screaming her head off, and I have a personal investment and wanting to be right about the fact that children shouldn't behave that way when they're around adults who might have noise damage, right? So I get myself all nuts. Well, I went out in the waiting room. Now there's nowhere to go. I can't get out of there because my eyes are dilated. I got to wait to go back in and see the doctor. And I'm in this waiting room with this 2-year-old who's screaming her head off. Well, they had a Highlights magazine there, and I sat down next to her. And her parents, I don't know. They were right there with her, but nobody was doing anything to help this child. So I started reading out of the Highlights magazine, and as soon as I started reading to her, she was really interested. And it turned out to be the most fun because she got such a kick out of this little story in the Highlights magazine, and I got such a kick out of her, you know, just wanting it. She wanted attention. And her mother and father kept saying to me, "Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much."
Aww.
It turned out to be the best time. It really did. And, you know, this is what he's talking about. This is what he's talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, that I was guided to do that. Mm-hmm. And it was, I was amazed by it, actually. I was really quite amazed by how that unfolded because I was just guided to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's awesome. You reminded me, too, when you were first describing the situation of being in the doctor's waiting room, and I think I've shared this story before, and I'll share it again briefly because it's kind of a long story, but this relates with this, you know, having a personal investment in being a person. And, you know, I've shared very openly before that one of the ways that, you know, that my ego proves to me that I'm a person is because I can get fearful, very fearful, and you know, wrestle with anxiety. And so I was in a doctor's office once, this is years ago now, and nervous, had to get some blood drawn in the doctor's office. And as I was getting the blood drawn, the nurse was, I think I've shared this before, the nurse, as I was describing some symptoms that I had always had, but I was just basically getting checked out, the nurse was like, "Oh, that's not good. That's not good." And then she goes, "Don't you pass out on me." And guess what I did?
Oh, thank God. Of course.
Everything went white and, you know, I lost my hearing and, like, quickly they see me and they put my feet back and bring me gummy worms. And so, you know, you could say, what a horrible nurse, right? This lady was a real terrible, terrible nurse. So I went through that experience and very much was willing to look at it as, you know, she is coming from me. That I called forth this situation to, again, freak myself out to prove that I am a person because I have this personal investment in being a person. So I was working at it. I mean, when the going gets tough for me, that's when, like, I start really digging my heels in and really, really, I mean, now I'm doing the course all the time, but there were sort of ebbs and flows in terms of the diligence with which I was working the course. And so I had to do some more lab work after that appointment, only this time I had to go into, like, a hospital to do it because they didn't do the test in, like, the normal kind of LabCorp place. So so in my head, I'm like, great, you know, hospitals are even more anxiety provoking for me. There's like all sorts of stuff there that I don't want to see. So I go into the lab in this hospital to get the test done. And as I look down and I'm checking in, I was like, oh my gosh, hi. And it was one of my roommates from college. It was her mom. So I immediately felt calmer because I should say, going into this situation, I was determined to call forth witnesses to love. I was determined. I was letting go and handing it over so deeply and just determined that if this is coming from me, this time I'm calling forth witnesses to love. So, and I was still a little nervous, but I go in, immediately relax because I see my friend's mom. I don't even ask her. She's the one that comes back with me and does the lab, draws the blood for me. We're talking about her daughter, my friend, and my friend's children, and it was totally fine. I had no pass-out response. And as I'm leaving, gives me goosebumps. As I'm walking out the door, she says, you know, this is so nice. She's like, it was a Monday. She's like, I never work on Mondays. I got called in a half an hour before
wow.
you showed up.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was such a profound experience for me to really, you know, it's one of those experiences that shows you that, yeah, the course is talking about what it's accurate that this really is coming from our mind, and as we learn how to listen to the Holy Spirit instead of the ego, we can learn to see those witnesses that prove to us when we no longer have that personal investment in being a person, when we're willing to loosen our fixed belief in that, we can start to see those witnesses come forth for love rather than for fear.
You know where I really, really get this is on the road when I'm driving, because New Jersey can be, you know, I've actually got it set in my mind, you know, that New Jersey drivers are crazy. So I attract them like, oh, they're right there at every turn. But the minute I bring the Holy Spirit in, the minute I choose, no, I don't want this. I want peace. They literally they could be tailgating me one minute, and the next minute, as soon as I shift my, you know, get that willingness to take it to the Holy Spirit, they'll turn off. They're gone.
Uh-huh.
It strengthens my faith. It really does.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. That's awesome. That's awesome. Great example.
This is Rhett. You guys, these are awesome shares. I want to thank all of you for these. It's bringing this paragraph totally like to life for me. And I wanted to just share really quickly the sentence that just makes me shake my head because it's so powerful, is if you are unwilling to perceive an appeal for help from a brother as what it is, an appeal for help, it is because you are unwilling to give help and to receive it.
Yeah.
And when I read that, I thought about the state that I can get into when I'm being all selfish and in my ego. And that is exactly the way I feel. I don't want to give help, and I don't want to receive it either. And so when I invert this, I can see that when I am in that state, then when I become, through the help of the Holy Spirit, conscious and aware of that fact, then what I can do to begin to work cooperatively and actively with the Holy Spirit is the opposite of this. Okay, I'm aware, I'm in my ego right now, I'm feeling like crap, so I'm aware that I don't want to give help, so let's look at that and let's reverse that. I want to help myself. Because when I'm in a pity party, poor me kind of mindset, I truly don't want to help myself. I want to do things that sabotage and make me justify feeling.
Oh,
crummy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and also receive help? No way. I literally am so conscious of the fact that if somebody tries to help me when I'm having a pity party, I don't want it. Because then I have to look at the fact that I'm wanting to have a pity party. So this sentence was just incredibly powerful for me because it took something that I know that this is true about myself, and it's so helpful to see it just spelled out like this. Because not, you know, the next time I'm having a pity party, I can say, hold on now, okay, I am not wanting to give help to this brother or to myself. I'm just wanting to see him or her as the problem, and it's all about them and not me. And I just think that this sentence is just wonderful. Just gold star it, flag it as something super cool.
Wait a minute. What paragraph is that in? I'm just trying to see it.
This is paragraph 5.
One we just read.
Yeah, the one we just read. Mm-hmm.
Kind of in the middle.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's in
bold. And
too.
It's in upper. Yeah, it's bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bold. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I just want to say thank you to all of you for helping me see this. This is beautiful.
Oh, thank
tonight.
You.
Well,
that was an awesome
chair. Thank you for reviewing it, because really, I can
it's
relate
awesome
to that.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Super, super helpful.
Good stuff.
Very good stuff. Awesome. Thank you, Rhett.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Wow. Well, let's keep going. Okay, actually, this is funny. This is what we were just talking about. Whenever you fail to recognize a call for help, you are refusing help. Would you maintain that you do not need it? Yet this is what you are maintaining when you refuse to recognize a brother's appeal, for only by answering his appeal can you be helped. Deny him your help, and you will not perceive God's answer to you. The Holy Spirit does not need your help in interpreting motivation, but you do need his. Only appreciation is an appropriate response to your brother. Gratitude is due him for both his loving thoughts and his appeals for help, for both are capable of bringing love into your awareness if you perceive them truly. And all your sense of strain comes from your attempts not to do just this. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah, this reminds me of Abraham Hicks, and she said that she calls it beating the drum of what you don't want. And it's really funny because when you're in that space of beating the drum that you don't want and anything comes into your, you know, you're just like, you know, piss off, get away from me. And you're just, like Rhett was saying, and it's just funny to me. When you're in that space of beating the drum of what you don't want, and you don't want to hear anything else, you know, you're not in the space to receive.
Right. Yeah, awesome. I love that, beating the drum of what you don't want.
You know, there really seems to be something very powerful and really, anymore for me, it's kind of no matter what it is, just letting it all be exactly as it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems like you can really work with the Holy Spirit because now you're not so preoccupied with, oh, I failed, or, oh, this is wrong, or it should be different, or something could change here. You know, it's just really, when I can do that, it helps so much.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many rich sentences every single sentence in this paragraph we could talk about. The thing that came to mind, one of the things that came to mind for me, so, yeah, I could just, like, reread this whole paragraph, just emphasizing every sentence. They're all so good. Failing to recognize a call for help, we're refusing it. I mean, would you maintain that you don't need it? Yet this is what you're maintaining when you refuse to recognize a brother's appeal. For only by answering his appeal can you be helped. That sentence right there reminds me of that story that I've shared so many times where, again, we don't answer their appeal necessarily with words. The Course says, you know, if a brother is speaking insanely, he needs correction. He needs an answer at a different level. So it's not necessarily that we do this with words, but the story comes to mind again that I've shared so many times of being on the phone with a family member, and I was judging that they were talking nonsense, and I was simply willing to remember to trust that the Holy Spirit is in that person's mind, period, and I didn't expect that they were going to start talking differently or anything, or you know, whatever, and yet they did start talking differently, and they started suddenly having this awareness of their own ego, and it was my willingness just to go to the Holy Spirit in my own mind and see the Holy Spirit, you know, the Holy Spirit in their mind joining with my mind, and that was when a huge shift happens, and that's answering the appeal. It's about being willing to not use the body's eyes and instead turn to the Holy Spirit, to let the Holy Spirit's perception be our teacher, be our eyes.
And that's really, that's why I just brought up this, because I'm thinking to myself, what is that?
I don't know. That was an interesting, it's somebody, let's see. We might need to ask somebody to put on, go on mute. I think it's an 858 number. If you have some background noise, if you could press *6. I'm going to see, okay, I'm going to mute your line and see if that works.
Who is that?
Okay. It was just somebody else on the call, and I'm not sure if they realized that. So whoever that was, I just put your line on mute. And if you want to come off mute, just press *6 again. Okay. Sorry. I'm sure they couldn't hear that noise, but we could. okay, where were we? So, Paula, you were just saying that's you brought up.
That's why I brought up this idea of just allowing everything to be exactly as it is, you know. And that's Abraham Hicks really stresses that, you know.
Yeah.
There is just no matter what you do, they don't have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Deidre? I mean, I've listened to a lot of those tapes, and I am astounded at this very thing. Only appreciation is an appropriate response to your brother. That is always their response to anybody in, you know, in a fearful place, or anybody who's having a problem. The love that comes from those tapes is...
That's awesome. And finish that sentence.
Is
gratitude
awesome.
Is due him for both his loving thoughts and his appeals for help, for both are capable of bringing love into your awareness if you perceive them truly. So that's cool. That's, again, just reemphasizing the fact that everything, when we give anything that we see with the body's eyes to the Holy Spirit will use it on behalf of our awakening rather than it be used by the ego on behalf of our staying separate.
Yeah.
So both his loving thoughts and appeals for help are both capable of helping us wake up.
Wow, this is Rhett. You guys, you're right, Corinne. This whole paragraph is so rich. Every sentence is so solid gold. And what it tells me is that, you know, what is worse than being in this illusion and believing that when a brother attacks me, and holy smokes, this happens every day, and believing that I am subject to my day being ruined because this brother or sister is doing something that is just really throwing me into a tailspin. Whereas with this orientation, I can come to the space where I know I'm not a victim of any attack from a brother. Mm-hmm. And if I do feel that way, I can look at this paragraph and say, oh, it's because I'm not willing to do all these things. I'm not willing to forgive him or her or myself. I'm just going to get sucked into this drama. That's a horrible feeling to know that this world, that I'm just at the mercy of any brother's attack. And this is saying never the case.
Right.
Never the case.
Yeah. Never the case.
Never the case. And I can go ahead and I can be secure and know I can have a great day every day if I use these tools, you know. It's just wonderful. I just feel like shouting this from the mountaintops to the whole world.
I know, right?
Oh,
it does. It's so like, in the course somewhere it says that I think it's the Holy Spirit is trembling with readiness to give us, it's the Holy Spirit or just the universe is trembling with readiness to give us these gifts. And when we start opening to this and having these experiences, it's like, I'm trembling with readiness to want to share this and yell it from the mountaintop because it is so powerful and so profound.
Yes, gratitude is due him. Gratitude is due him for both his loving thoughts and his appeals for help, for both are capable of bringing love into my awareness if I choose them truly. That right there. Wow.
Isn't that awesome? I love it. I love it.
And all your sense of strain.
And
all your sense of strain comes from your attempts not to do justice.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yep.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow, wow, wow. I have big, thick, pretty much every sentence in that paragraph is underlined. So let's read some more. We'll see, actually, if we can finish this section. How simple, then, is God's plan for salvation? There is but one response to reality, for reality evokes no conflict at all. There is but one teacher of reality who understands what it is. He does not change his mind about reality because reality does not change. Although your interpretations of reality are meaningless in your divided state, his remain consistently true. He gives them to you because they are for you. Do not attempt to help a brother in your way, for you cannot help yourselves. But hear his call for the help of God, and you will recognize your own need for the Father. And I'm just going to read one more paragraph. I'll read two right now and then the next two. Your interpretations of your brother's need is your interpretation of yours. By giving help, you are asking for it. And if you perceive but one need in yourself, you will be healed. For you will recognize God's answer as you want it to be. And if you want it in truth, it will be truly yours. Every appeal you answer in the name of Christ brings the remembrance of your Father closer to your awareness. For the sake of your need, then, hear every call for help as what it is, so God can answer you.
Oh, Corinne, please review this. I mean, what is your take on this last paragraph?
I feel like it's the same theme of what we've been talking about, that by being willing to turn to the Holy Spirit in any given circumstance when we think, you know, a brother is acting crazy or acting sane, all of it can be used, any of it that whatever we give to the Holy Spirit can be used on behalf of our awakening, excuse me. So that's the theme that I hear in all of this. By being willing, like this sentence here where it says, by giving help, you are asking for it. By turning to the Holy Spirit, by being willing to turn to the Holy Spirit for that person, or just because perhaps you're reacting in some way, you're asking for that healing for yourself. And it says you will be healed. For you will recognize God's answer as you want it to be, and if you want it in truth, it will be truly yours. So if we truly, truly want the truth, it will be truly ours. We'll be able to have that experience. And every where it says, every appeal you answer in the name of Christ brings the remembrance of your Father closer to your awareness. So again, every appeal that you answer, meaning every time we turn to the Holy Spirit and ask for the Holy Spirit's interpretation rather than ours, that awareness of truth comes closer to our awareness. I don't know. Does
our awareness of truth comes closer to?
And anybody else can jump in too. Is there anything that specifically you were questioning?
You know, I'm driving up Route 18 yesterday into that. We had a storm here last night that was really pretty dramatic. And I'm driving up Route 18 into this storm. It is pitch black up ahead of me. And all I kept thinking about is the workbook lesson, there is nothing to fear. Because I was starting to feel pretty fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And the lightning was like everything. And I don't like being on a high-speed road like that in a situation like that because you really, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And once I got that thought into my head that there is nothing to fear, mm-hmm. It didn't start raining. I mean, I literally got off of that high-speed road onto the main highway, which where I could turn off at any point, and people are not driving real fast. The whole thing, I got to my destination effortlessly, mm-hmm. and I think that's what this is saying. You know, we're literally creating our reality as we're moving through the day, and when we move through the day with him and trust and know there is nothing to fear and his will for us is just divine, and mm-hmm. he wants us to be relaxed and happy mm-hmm. and stress-free.
Beautiful.
I don't know why it's so apparent to me in those kind of uncomfortable situations. But, you know, when I'm just bipping along here.
Yeah, you know, the
sentence. Doing it Paula's way.
Yeah. My eyes just landed on the sentence as you were talking. Although your interpretations of reality are meaningless in your divided state, his remain consistently true. So I'm just thinking, interpreting, you know, fear, that you're in a fearful situation, that's actually a meaningless interpretation. And his
interpretation,
which is that you are, you know, whole and healed and you remain in truth as we were created, that is his interpretation consistently true.
Oh, that is so wonderful.
Let's actually read the last two paragraphs before we run out of time. There's more good stuff. By applying the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the reactions of others more and more consistently, you will gain an increasing awareness that his criteria are equally applicable to you. For to recognize fear is not enough to escape from it, although the recognition is necessary to demonstrate the need for escape. The Holy Spirit must still translate it into truth. If you were left with a fear, having recognized it, you would have taken a step away from reality, not towards it. Yet we have repeatedly emphasized the need to recognize fear and face it without disguise as a crucial step in the undoing of the ego. Consider how well the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the motives of others will serve you then. Having taught you to accept only loving thoughts in others, and to regard everything else as an appeal for help, he has taught you that fear is an appeal for help. This is what recognizing it really means. If you do not protect it, he will reinterpret it. That is the ultimate value to you in learning to perceive attack as a call for love. We have learned surely that fear and attack are inevitably associated. If only attack produces fear, and if you see attack as the call for help that it is, the unreality of fear must dawn upon you. For fear is a call for love, an unconscious recognition of what has been denied. Wow. This last sentence just, I feel like, struck me in a way that it didn't previously strike me. Fear is a call for love, an unconscious recognition of what has been denied. So fear, it says in the next section that fear's only purpose is to conceal love. So we unconsciously, we know that we have denied love, and that's why the fear is there. And fear is, I love this last sentence, for fear is a call for love, an unconscious recognition of what has been denied. We know that love is all there is, And because we want to play here in this hiding place from God, in this big earth playground, we have to deny it and keep it out of our awareness to keep this all going. So we actually know already that love is all there is and fear is nothing. What else came up for people as we were reading these paragraphs? There's, again, lots of goodies in here. I'll share the second to last paragraph where it says, "Yet we have repeatedly emphasized the need to recognize fear and face it without disguise as a crucial step in undoing the ego." I know I've shared before that I used to do the course and feel better and put it down and still go about my day. And, you know, I would say I was still turning to the Holy Spirit throughout the day. But once I started realizing from an anxiety perspective, from a perspective of overcoming anxiety, that it's not about making the anxiety go away or, you know, just like or stuffing it or pushing it to the side to try to feel peaceful again. It's about looking at that fear with the Holy Spirit. So in the I was visited for a time by anxiety in the morning. And what I would do is rather than just try to, like, you know, get up and hop out of bed and start doing something to just make the anxiety go away, I would sit with it and say, "Holy Spirit, I'm willing to look at this with you. I'm willing. Let's sit and look," and here you go. And that's what this is saying, that it's about recognizing fear and facing it without disguise, giving it to the Holy Spirit. And that's a crucial step and the undoing of the ego. Other thoughts, questions, examples, anything we have? We're at the top of the hour, but we can take one more minute if we need it. Or are we good?
Well, I want to thank you for that last share, Corinne. That was very instructive and useful, beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, good. Good.
This
good,
whole
good.
Evening, this whole call has.
This whole section.
Really,
this whole
really amazing. Thank
All
you
right.
so
well,
much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. And have a miracle-minded week. And I will see you next week.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night. Good night. Thank you.
Bye.